Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the broth lady or the inventor of the hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size and self-love and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Valentine of thepaleomom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. Hi, Sarah.
Welcome to the first show of our fourth year of podcasting.
What?
Right?
That just...
Bam!
Oh, it's usually me that like tells you about these things and your mind gets blown.
Right, and I just blew your mind. Role reversal!
Wow, that's a long time, guys.
Well, like, okay, so to be fair, when you say first episode of the fourth year, that only means we've accomplished three years.
Three whole years.
When have I ever stuck with anything for 3 years? Okay, like, actually
other than paleo,
times.
Yeah.
But, you know, paleo,
and marriage,
blogging,
and parenting.
PhD, thesis, a bachelor's degree, marriage. I'm actually kind of one of those commitment people. But still, 3 years is a long time to do something.
I was at a event this weekend for Down South Paleo, and someone told me that they were, like, catching up listening to all the episodes. And, like, honestly, every time that happens, I know that you know what my response is because you've seen me say it a million times, but I genuinely have, like, this feeling of remorse and pity for them, and it just, like, comes out of me, and I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, that's way too much.
I basically tell people not to bother. I'm like, yeah, no, we weren't good. We were not good for a while. And I'm like, oh, but I already listened to the first 10 and you were great. I'm like, well, okay, then you've got some stuff to look forward to. There was the dark times. We won't mention the dark times. But then at the other end of the dark times, I think we found our stride.
Yeah. Just saying. So here we are, kicking off our
fourth year of podcasting.
And that fourth year is evidently going to be filled with doing things that we should have done in the third year, because we're finally having the show that we told people we've been meaning to have for a couple of months. But before we get to that, I told people that I would announce when the Reset and Thrive library is live. And as of the posting of this podcast, it is live today, August 21st through August 31st, 2015. You can go to the link in Sarah's show notes, or you can go to the link in my show notes. And as I described last episode, we have compiled 40 of the leading health, wellness, and organizational living experts in the online community, and found 40 resources for you that have never been bundled before. And we are offering you this awesome e-library of these resources. There's more than 40 of them, because some of them are like multiple pages that you print because they're like, you know, printables to help you live an organized, balanced life. So of 40 plus resources that are valued at their regular sales price. And this is not like some trickery. This is not math. This is not how much you might save with coupons. Like, just the books themselves that are being offered, or the ebooks, or workshops, or courses, or printables. And there's even like an audio one that you can do. They would normally be valued at over $1,000. And you can currently get them right now for $39, which is less than $1 a piece. And we are also providing exclusive bonuses with the bundle, including 28 discounts from some of the best vendors in the industry. I talked about, we got you IntelliBed, Sarah, for your sleep book that's included in the bundle. But there's 27 other of our favorite vendors that are offering really fantastic exclusive discounts only for people who purchase the bundle. And then on top of that, we've also put together an exclusive bonus meal plan that I personally created using the different cookbooks in the bundle. And the reason that we did that is because we get feedback from people all the time that they end up like buying bundles, or in this case, this library of ebooks, and then not utilizing them. And because it's a really busy time of year, we thought, what a great way to kind of help people jump into and get familiar with some of these cookbook resources than to create a meal plan, which should also help you simplify your life, which is the theme of the bundle. So there's 2 weeks of meal plans. You can do them back to back, or you can do them one or none. It's your choice. But they each include at least one recipe from the e-cookbooks that are included, so that it'll encourage you to go check out those ebooks, and then you can get a feel for what's in them, and you'll probably choose some favorites that then you can get familiar with and cook out of in the future, rather than, you know, feeling like you should buy the e-library and then you don't make use of it. Nobody wants that. We want you to make use of these fantastic resources that I'm super, super excited to share with everyone. They are honestly fantastic. We had wonderful submissions from so many people in the community, and it was really difficult because I'm really picky and I only wanted to include 40 because I didn't want to overwhelm people. So I can truly tell you that, you know, what we ended up selecting and including in the bundle is top-notch. And you should definitely go check it out, because both Sarah has posted on her blog and I have posted on my blog. I'm super jazzed. Are you super jazzed, Sarah?
I'm like crazy jazzed. And I think there's a cat who's also crazy jazzed.
She is super excited.
Is that Danny?
Yeah, that's Danny.
She's like, woo, woo. Bundle. I mean, library.
Yeah.
Sorry. Are we not using the bundle word?
No, we can use it. These resources are bundled, but we found that people get really confused when you say bundle. And so, like, I just want to make it clear to people that it is a library of... Okay, I hear you, Danny. Daenerys, we get it. You want to go outside. You're not going to go outside. You're an indoor cat. It is a library of e-resources that you download once and you keep forever. It's yours. There's no trickery. There's no membership. There's nothing. There are some programs and some vendors that are offering coupons that if you wanted to sign up for, let's say, you know, the 30-day meal plan, for example, once a month meals is offering like their menu plan, right? So if you sign up for once a month meals, then that's its own membership thing. But to get the e-library, you download one file and then you can put it on any of your like electronic smart devices, whether that's your computer or your iPad or your Android or your Kindle, like, you know, whatever it is. These are PDFs, and we have instructions for everybody to figure out how to get them on your devices, and also have, you know, a team of people who are able to help you if you can't figure it out. So yes, the resources are bundled together at a discounted price, but I thought it was more clear to start calling this an e-library that you can purchase rather than a bundle, which we got feedback from people that they were very confused about. I don't know if you got that when you did a bundle, but
yes. So I think, you know, one of the things about bundles that anything that I market, right? Like my main everything that I do is like education and resources. But, you know, I have a team, and part of being able to pay my team a competitive wage is, right, having some marketing that sort of seeps in. And I'm really, really picky about what I market. So I only would ever recommend something that I'm like 100% enthusiastic about as being an amazing resource and worth every penny, like the Reset and Thrive e-library, like how I threw that in. But it's also like really important for me to explain to people, like, what's in it for me and like how, right, when it's something like this, how it works, right? So as a contributor, I'm contributing an ebook that I could otherwise, right, sell independently and make, you know, $20 per book on. And yet it's being included as one of 40 resources in the Paleo and Thrive like e-library. So so like why would I like agree to basically, you know, sell my book for 50 cents? And as an author, there's a couple of things, right? So people know that as contributing authors, we get a commission, and that's one way that we sort of recoup some of our losses. But because these things are so exciting, because they're a short period of time, because it's brings like an audience from a really diverse group of people, what happens is it like it becomes a way of sort of getting the word out, of, you know, being introduced to potentially new fans, maybe somebody who's, you know, going to see what I wrote for an ebook and then wants to buy one of my print books later, right? So it's that exposure that becomes so valuable, and it's just part of, you know, growth and getting out the message, and then sort of this long-term plan of like eventually that will pay off in terms of dollars. So it's okay to sort of sacrifice sales of a book now in order for it to go in a bundle. And it's having done one, it is a expletive deleted, ridiculous amount of work to organize, and logistics and the technical support. And it is absolutely like one of the biggest things we've ever done. And I know you guys don't have any easier time of it, weirdly, than we did. And so, you know, part of what's going on is also, you know, recouping the team members who are putting this together. And I think it's really important for people to understand that that's how it works. Like it's like, there's this skepticism of like, how can I really get that many books for that cheap? And it's really boils down to that exposure to new markets is worth it for the contributors. Cause we, right, you get contributors from sort of different tangential areas, right? There's not that much overlap of fans and everybody's promoting it. So, you know, somebody who makes, you know, homemade skincare products is going to be promoting the bundle, and they might not have very many readers that are the same as my readers. And there might be, right, a subset of my readers who are interested in following them and a bunch of their readers that are interested in following me. So it's that kind of exchange. Plus, you know, we get to do that thing that is first and foremost, which is provide amazing resources for people, which, you know, for me is the number one motivation behind everything.
Absolutely. And just to kind of piggyback off of what you're saying, the community that has contributed to this book is a lot wider than Paleo. So we're hoping that, you know, people will find resources in the bundle that can lead to connections with authors and bloggers that they might not have found otherwise. We really stretched Monica in particular, our team member and podcast producer, really, really stretched to find people who the Paleo community from a lifestyle perspective would greatly appreciate and might not be aware of. And those people have contributed resources that, in my opinion, lead to a healthy life, because I got really into like purging an organization earlier this year as a mechanism for stress reduction. And it actually legitimately helped me reduce my stress to reduce the things in our life and create organization. And it contributed to my overall wellness. And that was kind of the inspiration for this bundle of resetting and thriving at the start of this, you know, back to school period or mommy new year, or even just for those of you who don't have kids, but, you know, when summer's over and fall starts, there's a lot of kind of, you know, resetting priorities in terms of, you know, the slowness of, you know, everybody taking vacation if you work full time. Like that happens for me in my office, right? So people come back and they kind of hit it hard before the holidays, and that's this busy period. So it was the inspiration for finding people that I really feel like, not just, you know, real food recipe cookbooks, but there are so many other things about this bundle that you can find on either of our sites to find out about the 40 resources that are included that we're hoping will do exactly what Sarah just described and introduce you to people that you might not have been aware of. And, you know, it's things that, like, for example, I don't homeschool, but because I know that that's something that is of value to people, there is a, you know, resource guidebook related to homeschooling in this bundle. That may not apply to everybody, but I know, you know, if I were a homeschooling mom at this time of year, getting some sort of inspiration to help me do that would be beneficial. And just the opposite, there are going to be people that are interested in this bundle that aren't necessarily paleo because they are interested in the organization and the tools that are included in there for healthy lifestyles, and they're going to be introduced to some paleo recipe authors and e-cookbooks. And wouldn't it be fantastic if some of these people who aren't paleo see some of these e-cookbooks and see all the delicious real food recipes and how easy it can be to live grain-free, dairy-free, refined sugar-free, legume-free, and say, hey, I can do that. So, you know, it's our goal as we put this together that we have the potential to reach a greater audience, as you indicated, and hopefully help people find things that they might not necessarily have found on their own. So thus concludes this infomercial on the Reset and Thrive e-library. Again, you can find links and information in the show notes, as well as, you know, Sarah on your blog, on our blog, and just really encourage you to at least check it out, if for no other reason than just to see if it's something you'd be interested in. Even if three or four of these ebooks look like something that you would read, you're going to save yourself money buying the entire bundle for just, for example, those four books, because it's only $39 for everything. And you can also gift it, which is a really fantastic idea for people in your life that might be having a difficult time getting started with stuff, because there's like so many resources to help them get started from varying points of views. So you can always buy one under somebody else's email account and have it sent directly to them, or you can go ahead and do it to your own and then forward them the link. But either way, it makes a really great gift as well. So there we have it.
And scene. Did you happen to see what I did this weekend?
Yes, I saw a little bit about what you have going on this weekend.
So I spent the weekend not sleeping and drinking and hanging out with Elena Haber from Grazed and Enthused and shooting the cover for our new cookbook.
Congratulations, you ladies look fantastic, and I love her. She is so adorable. Yeah. I met her for the first time in Chicago and have been, you know, stalking her on social media ever since, and I think that it's a really great pairing and looks like definitely a resource that is going to be awesome.
Yeah. So I've dropped a lot of hints that I'm working on two books and the announcement for the first one is coming pretty soon. And this is sort of like the unofficial announcement, because I haven't gotten around to, you know, the blog post that tells you all of the things that are in it. But the book is actually, we noticed, oh, Amazon has it without a cover, but it's got the full description. Okay. I guess it's official. And the cover should be up there within the next probably 2 weeks. But we've been working on this book for months and months and months and months. And I have to say that Elena has been like an absolute dream to collaborate with. Like, I'm already being like, what do you think our theme should be for Healing Kitchen 2? Like, I'm already like, because she's just been so much fun to work with. And it's been such a great, like, we build on each other's ideas and it just raises everything up, and I'm just so excited. So it's a fully autoimmune protocol cookbook, has over 175 recipes, and it's got a 12 meal plans. Okay, we've only actually finished two, but we have 12 mapped out, so there will be 12. It's really got this focus on quick and easy. But what's great about the way that Elena's been developing her recipes is that there's nothing that is bland, right? So it's quick and easy, but everything's got really complex flavors. And we've put a lot of work into making it a very budget conscious book. So it's really designed for people who look at the autoimmune protocol and are intimidated and feel like they can't do it. And it's really designed to be like, you know, whatever your barriers are, let's break those down and make it so that you can be successful with this and really heal. And it comes out February 23rd. So we're actually probably a week and a half or 2 weeks away from actually submitting it to the publisher and starting that editing and graphic design process that authors always enjoy. But, you know, I'm really excited that I have a co-author to, like, you know, to share that with. So I think I'm really excited. I mean, so far, you know, so far our friendship has made it through this book, and I hope that it continues. Clearly, bottles of wine while shooting a cover is one of the keys to maintaining that close friendship. But we just had so much fun. It was a really long, exhausting day. I don't know, how long did you spend shooting the cover for Real Life Paleo? Because that was also a really complex shoot.
Yeah, that was like 8 hours. We were pushing daylight at the end when we finally did it. We ended up like cooking the same thing 4 different times because
We were 8.5 hours, not including cleanup or all of the prep work we did the day before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was just like camera time.
Right. For one photo. So it was a really intense day. And like, so between Elena and me and our photographer, two of us forgot to go to the bathroom at all during those 8.5 hours. And all three of us just completely neglected to eat. But just, you know, that we were surrounded by food that we couldn't eat. And so we just, there was other stuff we could have, if we needed a break for food, we could have done it. But we, like, all of us were like, oh, it'll just be like 20 more minutes. It'll just be 20 more minutes. And we did that for like 7 out of the 8.5 hours. But I'm like super excited about that cover photo because it's exactly what I had in my head. And to see that like actually now in front of me, I'm like, yay, it's so exciting. So, so officially the book's called The Healing Kitchen. The cover's not up on Amazon, but the, description is, so you can read more about it, and it releases February 23rd, and pre-orders are a great way to support the authors and also to guarantee yourself the lowest price. We really need to move on and do a show.
I am with you.
You concur.
And we've had this show prepped for so long, we should be able to do it, like, so fast.
It should be, like, behind our backs. Wait. Behind, what do we need our hands for when we're podcasting?
The mute button.
The mute, yes, especially the unmuting after.
Yep.
I'm just saying, someone may have some issues with the unmuting. So we are officially talking.
That person is muting. Like, in order for them to have to unmute, they are successfully muting.
When that person's mute button works.
Right.
They're just, I'm just.
Okay, I mean, so just for the record. Just for the record, if you heard that podcast where Sarah called me out on my mute button not working, when Matt produced that podcast, he literally like went to Amazon and bought me a new headset like as he was producing the podcast. And I had already told him it was broken like a couple of times. And he comes up, he's like, you're right, it was so broken. It's so broken. You're going to get a new one. It's going to be here from Amazon tomorrow. I was like, okay. So anyway, show.
Let's do it.
He is
right.
The best.
Okay, so one of the things that we haven't talked about for a while, but we get a lot of questions about, is skin health. And in particular, you know, I think we both have a large number of readers because they're such common conditions who are battling with, you know, skin conditions. And the thing with skin conditions is, as somebody who suffers from them, it's such a, you know, visible badge that, you know, like to me, I always felt like it was this proof that I had to wear in front of the world that I wasn't healthy, right? To me, that's how it always felt, because I have an autoimmune skin condition called lichen planus, and I also suffer from scalp psoriasis. And so for me, it's always, you know, it hits you in a very I don't know, maybe vain place, but it really, you know, it really sort of undermines self-confidence to have this, you know, very visible thing. And I, you know, I had many a summer where I insisted on wearing long sleeves and pants all summer because I didn't want, you know, my forearms and my shins, which is, and wrists and ankles where I get the majority of my lichen planus lesions. I didn't want those to be visible. And so it's such a emotional type of condition. And it's unfortunately also skin conditions tend to, not always, but they tend to respond the slowest to diet and lifestyle interventions. So when we make changes that are sort of conducive to healing, skin can show the benefits of those changes last. And that's because, you know, skin is really the lowest priority organ for the human body. And as we're healing, we have to do so much internal healing. And as we are, you know, doing this micronutrient-rich diet, those resources go to every other system before they go to our skin. And so it gets frustrating. So I get a lot of emails from people, and we're going to talk about one later, who are doing the autoimmune protocol to address whether it's an autoimmune skin condition or just an immune skin condition. And right, there's this like 2, 3, 4 months go by, and like, when am I going to see benefits? And of course, there's a really detailed conversation that we can have about that, and I'm sure we'll get to it later. But one of the biggest things is just, it's hard to have that patience while you wait for all of that internal healing to happen before the external healing is really visible. And when you see people with other autoimmune conditions, you know, have this like resounding success, you know, that they're feeling better after 2 weeks or 3 weeks. You know, I had one person who sent me an email to share their story with me, and they had gotten out of a wheelchair in 2 days. And you just kind of go like, first of all, that's not the dominant experience. That's definitely unusual for health to turn around that quickly on the autoimmune protocol. But when you hear those stories and you're battling with a skin condition that's so recalcitrant, right? It requires so much patience. And you hear these other inspiring stories, instead of it making you feel encouraged, it can really just make you feel deflated. And so it's really important to have this conversation about, like, skin conditions are tricky. You know, the skin is a barrier between the inside of the body and the outside world. There's a lot more factors than just what you're eating when it comes to skin health. And it becomes something that, requires typically more tinkering than, other chronic illnesses do. And that's really important information for people to know when they're sort of embracing this alternative health journey for mitigating skin conditions.
Agreed. And agreed. I think it, on a much lesser note, like, as someone with very sensitive skin, and I'm using quotation marks there because that's the term that's frequently used, you know, that healing affects not just people with chronic AIP. There are people who, you know, use nutrient-dense foods in an anti-inflammatory diet, i.e. paleo, not even necessarily AIP, to heal, like, cystic acne. And, you know, although that might not be an actual autoimmune condition, I find that myself, you know, having had adult acne that was resolved when I found, you know, the right foods that work for me, and it also overall finding those right foods helped general inflammation and health. It's also really refreshing to have that confidence that, you know, you feel like you're getting results from, you know, what you're putting in your body on the outside. But I would say, like, the flip side of that is that sometimes, like everything else that we do, you know, you can tinker and toy with all of these things, and if you're not seeing improvement in your health, it's still the same standard answer that you're going to get from us, that seeking, you know, professional medical help is of benefit. And there are people in the community who kind of have openly talked about, you know, doing everything they can to try to come up with a modified approach to diet, limiting nuts, seeds, AIP, whatever, and not seeing the results that they were hoping for in their skin conditions. And, you know, if you get to that point, it's likely affecting other things in your health. And, you know, it's just a reflection of what's going on the inside. So I would definitely recommend, if you've tried all these things and you're not seeing results, definitely don't be afraid or feel badly about seeking medical professional help, just the same way that we would recommend someone else to do if they had, you know, IBS that they couldn't resolve on their own. These kinds of things are all health conditions that are important to resolve.
Absolutely. 100%. So even though there may have been some science there, I think we should do some more science.
Oh, goodness. I thought that was science.
Oh, no. No, that was the intro to the science.
I was lying earlier when I said that we were going to be able to do this show. We're ready for your science, and it is not going to be super fast because this is like legit stuff, and I know from my own personal perspective that the thing that was the last healed was the skin, as you mentioned, and there is definite science involved in that. So
yes, there is. There's always science. What are you talking about?
Hit us with your geekdom.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
So because we're talking about skin, right, there's a lot of factors that influence skin health. One of them is just plain old having the nutrient resources the skin needs to be healthy. Another one is sort of the gut-brain-skin axis. So your gut needs to be healthy. Your brain needs to be healthy. And both of those things directly impact the inflammation in your skin. Your adrenal glands need to be healthy. So one of the things that happens when your cortisol is high is you get a stimulation to the immune system, but it's not throughout your entire body. So it actually will specifically go to certain places. And one of the places it goes to is to your skin. From an evolutionary perspective, your cortisol would be high because you were, you know, running away from a lion, and your body's preparing to have to heal a wound. And so all of these things work in concert. And one of the things I thought would be really interesting to talk about to sort of hone in on a little bit more detailed science for this show is actually wound healing. And in particular, because when you're dealing with a skin condition that is affecting the health of the skin, right, the first step is reducing inflammation and regulating the immune system and stopping the attack on whatever component of skin is being attacked, depending on the health condition. And that's something we've talked, you know, a lot about on the show, regulating the immune system, right? It's the topic of the Paleo Approach and the Paleo Approach cookbook, right? So that's something that there's a lot of resources that we've created to delve into. But something that I'm pretty sure we've never talked about on this show is the process of wound healing. So after you stop the immune system from attacking your skin, that skin needs to heal. And that sort of requires a different set of resources. So when you get a cut, the very first stage of wound healing is called hemostasis, which basically means blood clotting, right? So that's just the phase where we're like, okay, we've got a hole, let's patch it up. And let's, you know, stop letting the inside of the body out and stop letting the outside world in. And so that's actually probably one of the simplest phases of wound healing is simply blood clotting. And after that, we go through an inflammatory phase of wound healing. And this is like the normal inflammation. When we talk about inflammation in chronic illness, we're talking about inflammation that's not regulating itself. In a, you know, normal healthy person who gets a cut, there's a lot of really complex inflammatory processes that happen. So first of all, right, our immune system is dealing with debris. So that could be anything from, you know, dirt from, you know, whatever sharp implement, you know, made the cut in the first place. It could be germs that are in the air, but it can also be cells, fragments of cells, cells that, you know, haven't survived. And so the immune system sort of needs to clean all of that out. And of course, we've talked many times on the show about what a nutrient hog the immune system is in order to be able to do those really tightly regulated processes. But that inflammatory phase is why we get redness, why we can get sort of, you know, pus that, you know, like why a healing wound will have that kind of, you know, red, swollen, painful, you know, look and feel to it. And that all comes from the body's immune system targeting the wound to sort of clean up the mess. After the inflammatory phase of wound healing, the third out of four phases is called the proliferative phase. Proliferative is a word, when you talk about cells, that means cell division. So it basically means, you know, cells are proliferating. They're making copies of themselves. And so what happens is, you know, a type of cell called a fibroblast, they're a very nice flat cell that's really good at filling in space. They come to the site of injury. And they start doing some really neat things. So one of the things that they do is they help to produce connective tissue to help glue that wound together. And they also can actually help pull the edges of a wound together, sort of like by shrinking that space. And that is important whether you have, you know, a big gaping hole, which, you know, hopefully you don't. Hopefully you went to the ER. But even if you've got a really, really – it's true, though. It's true. If you have a gaping hole, doctor's a good option.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Good life choice.
But like, even when you have like a sharp cut from a knife and you are able to get it to, you know, clot and seal back up, and you see just that like thin line of clotting on the outside, that's still from a like cell perspective, that's still a canyon that needs to be shrunk back down, right? So especially when you've talked about the immune system sort of clearing out the debris. So you just kind of bring the edges together, and that's what happens during the proliferative phase. And that's also where you get new skin cells forming, you know, new blood vessels forming is all happening in that phase of wound healing. And then the final phase is called remodeling or maturation. And that's just where like everything, okay, like you've kind of, it's kind of like doing like a really fast patch job on your roof. And then you go when your roof is leaking, and then you go back and you're like, okay, now I'm going to go and like make this pretty and make sure it's something that's going to last and make sure that this is a roof that's now going to hold. And so it's this maturation phase can happen. It can take a very long period of time, right? Depending on the severity of the injury. But it's where, you know, that final, the detail work happens to reorganize so that your, whatever it is the way it was before the injury or as close to as possible. And you can sort of think of like when you first cut yourself really badly and you're finally, you know, you finally got skin again, but it's like this red bumpy scar. Then over time, that scar smooths out, it fades, maybe it disappears completely. That's the remodeling and the maturation phase of wound healing. And it can take years, you know, depending on the injury. So those four phases of wound healing, you know, each require fairly different nutrients to regulate. Now, they really require everything because you're building new tissue. New tissue uses all nutrients. So you really like you need to have your micronutrient stores in your body, you know, pretty topped up in order to really heal effectively. But there's certain nutrients that have been studied in the scientific literature and shown to be especially critical for wound healing. So they're either really important for various phases. They're really important for regulating those phases. They're used up in those phases. And they're known with like when you do studies and look at wound healing time, when you have those nutrients, you speed up wound healing. And when you don't have them, you slow down wound healing or you inhibit it altogether. So there's certain like micronutrients that have become absolute like wound healing stars. And they're really worth mentioning because these are the same micronutrients that you need to heal, you know, damaged skin, in the case of whether it's a cut, but also, you know, in the case of the immune system, you know, wreaking havoc on your skin as well. So one of the like major stars is vitamin A, and this is the animal form of vitamin A, right? Retinoic acid. So this is the type of vitamin A that we get from eating things like liver, and seafood. And, it is phenomenally important for all epithelial barriers. So your skin barrier, but also your gut barrier, your lung barrier, your sinus barrier. It's a ridiculously important nutrient. it's really important to emphasize that, you know, we are often told to think of things like beta carotene and other carotenoids in vegetables as being sources of vitamin A, but our bodies sort of at best convert about 3% of that into retinoic acid. So we're really talking about the animal form of vitamin A. And vitamin A is really essential for just about every phase of wound healing. It's especially important because it's an immune regulator. So it's especially important during the inflammation phase. But it's also really important during the proliferative phase. So it has really essential roles in a variety of functions that are happening in there. You know, the creation of connective tissue, controlling cell division. Those are things that vitamin A really plays a vital role. Vitamin C, you know, we're so used to thinking of taking vitamin C when we have a flu or when we have, you know, a cold and we're trying to boost our immune systems. It's not really boosting your immune systems. It's actually providing a resource that your immune system burns through really quickly when it's turned on, like it would be if you're fighting a cold. Well, it's also really, really necessary for the inflammatory phase of wound healing. And actually vitamin C, because it's such an important antioxidant, gets used in every phase of wound healing. And you burn through it when you're trying to, you know, heal from a wound. So it's a really, really important one to be getting lots of. My favorite micronutrient, as discussed last week on the show, is zinc. And, zinc is also, you know, it's foundational for the immune system. But it also is for wound healing, in part because of its role in inflammation. But there's studies showing that zinc supplementation can dramatically speed up wound healing. So zinc is like a really amazing one to get. And of course, I think we mentioned it last week, zinc deficiency is the most common micronutrient deficiency in Americans. Protein, which is not a micronutrient, unless we start breaking it down to the amino acids than it is. Protein is phenomenally important for wound healing. And when you think about it, you're creating new tissue, and that new tissue is predominantly made up of protein. And you're using immune cells to, you know, clean up the mess. And those cells are predominantly made of protein. And we actually know that protein sufficiency, so having enough, you know, amino acids stored that can be used for this type of things, is one of the most important things that we can do to speed up wound healing. And for example, you know, under sort of normal circumstances, you know, an average adult would use 60 to 70 grams of protein sort of as a bare minimum. Most of us are using a little bit more than that. But after severe injury, our daily requirements for protein can be as high as 250 grams. Like, so that's like four times more protein that we need in order to have the resources to heal from a severe injury compared to sort of normal average everyday life. So it's really, really important to be having, you know, animal protein in our diets. And within protein, there's, you know, having just enough protein is really important, but there's two amino acids, back to micronutrients again, that are like crazy superstars. One is glutamine, and that probably doesn't surprise people because we talk about L-glutamine supplementation all the time for gut health. One of the reasons why it's so good for gut health is because glutamine is actually a energy source for the cells that line the digestive tract, but it's also an energy source for immune cells, and it helps assist with cell growth, and it can also act as an antioxidant. And so it's really important for the inflammatory phase of wound healing because of that. And supplementation has dramatically sped up wound healing in scientific studies. The other one I don't think we talk about very often, I'm not sure we've ever talked about, is arginine. And arginine, again, is really important in the inflammatory phase, but also in the creation of collagen, which happens a little bit in the inflammatory phase, but predominantly in the proliferative phase of wound healing. So arginine really has these important roles in both of them. And it actually, when you have sufficient arginine, one of the things that changes is how your body knows like where to put these resources. So for example, you know, in studies where they've used arginine supplementation, they see that the amount of connective tissue of collagen in the wound site is much, much higher. And then the immune system is regulating itself better. And so one of the things that happens when the immune system's regulating itself better, it's more efficient at its job. So it's doing its job, but you're getting less of the redness and the swelling and the puffy and the pain. And that really, you know, it helps speed up healing, but it also helps with overall comfort. And then there's another nutrient. It's actually an enzyme, and it's not found in a ton of foods, but it has been used in wound healing studies really extensively and been shown to be pretty darned amazing. And it's called bromelain. The number one source that we get it from is pineapples. It's especially rich in pineapple stems, which of course we cut off the pineapple and throw into the compost. But studies have shown that bromelain supplementation supports all of the phases of wound healing, can dramatically reduce bruising and swelling and pain, but also speed up healing time. And it can actually act as an analgesic. It can lower risk of cancer. It can mitigate osteoarthritis. Like it has these pretty profound properties. And the science is really ubiquitously positive on bromelain. Not the easiest to get from food, but it is a pretty accessible supplement. So like Douglas Labs has a really clean supplement. I'm pretty sure Thorne Research has a really clean supplement for bromelain. So if you're dealing with sort of major injury, of course, always check with your doctor before doing any supplement or something like this. But bromelain is a good one. Scientific research shows 500 to 1,000 milligrams daily is about the right dose. Of course, what's funny is that there are no supplements that are measured in milligrams. They're all measured in some other units. So it's kind of hard to draw direct comparisons. But there's lots of supplements that are sort of at the – I can't even remember what the units are now. I like have to go and – I think they're milk clotting units, which is like a measurement of enzymatic activity. I think they're milk clotting units. And so like 5,000 to 10,000 milk clotting units is sort of a standard, and it's not easy to get information on how that translates to milligrams at all. I have no idea. I've looked it up. I spent like 2 hours trying to figure that out one day. Couldn't figure it out. But those supplements are high quality, and many people use them very effectively to help with wound healing. And they can also be used in things like arthritis and other joint issues is another sort of source for those. So those are some of like the wound healing superstars. You know, those are all, other than maybe bromelain, nutrients that we talk about a lot, because they also, you know, anything that's good for skin barrier health tends to also be good for gut barrier health, tends to be good for lung health and liver health and all of those other things. But it changes the focus of what we're eating when we're sort of eating for healing and eating for wound health. And it becomes really important to have sufficiency of all micronutrients. But these are ones that sometimes go maybe underrepresented in our diets, right? It really takes some intention to be getting sufficient zinc in our diets. And it really takes intention to be getting sufficient animal vitamin A in our diets. And even many, many, many of us are deficient in vitamin C, especially because we burn through vitamin C so quickly when our immune system's activated or when we're under stress. So having those on our radars can be really, really helpful.
That is a whole lot of knowledge bombs you just threw down right there.
I promised real science. So I told you there was the science intro to the real science.
Okay, so super quick, because that was super long. What are the top five foods that you would recommend that people eat that would perhaps be either nutrient-dense in those things or synergistic altogether? So, like, would you recommend that people eat oysters and oranges? Oysters with lemon juice squeezed on top of it. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Five things, if people are trying to heal, what do you think their best bets are?
So, seafood, especially shellfish like oysters, crab, shrimp, lobster actually has most of these things, not much vitamin C. So like seafood would be like an awesome, awesome way to go. And then I would probably, if I did oysters and pineapple, that would be a terrible combination. I would eat the oysters first and then eat the pineapple. I have a feeling that if you tried to put those together, like it would go from like, you know, when parties go bad, it would be that kind of thing happening in your mouth. Like, I can't imagine that being a good combination. But nutrient wise, it would be a really great combination. And maybe even, you know, some, you know, cod liver oil or some liver or some egg yolks to get that, that vitamin A. But I really think that, yeah, if you did zinc, oysters, some, you know, additional protein, because you have to eat a lot of oysters to get a lot of dietary protein because they're tiny. And then something like pineapple would hit the vitamin C and the bromelain. You can't go wrong with kale, liver and kale. There's liver, kale, and oysters and pineapple. Those are my nutrient superfoods for wound healing.
Sweet. All right. Questions.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So our first question is from Carrie Ann, and Carrie Ann says, I have scalp psoriasis that started 3 years ago. I've been on AIP for 10 weeks with absolutely zero change to my psoriasis. It is out of control, itchy and flaky with dry skin. I am potentially missing something that I should or shouldn't be doing. Should I have started to notice a change, even small, to my psoriasis by the end of 10 weeks on AIP?
I think we've already kind of touched on this. But first of all, good on you. I know how very difficult and frustrating it is, especially if you're not seeing progress the way that you would like to. But I would say that it's really individual dependent. There could be things that you are sensitive to that aren't included in AIP that are causing further non-responsiveness. But there's also the fact that it might just take a little bit longer. You know, for some people, it takes a little bit longer than others. I know for me, I was technically doing AIP, but I wasn't following the paleo approach. I know that might sound like semantics, but, you know, there was a defined autoimmune protocol before Sarah wrote her book, and that's what I went on for the first, was it like 2 months, Sarah, probably? I don't know.
Until, yeah, two or three, maybe.
Until you and I kind of had like a come to Sarah chat and you talked a lot with me specifically about the things to add to my diet that you at the time were drafting into the paleo approach. And within a couple of weeks,
I think
after
our first talk was about vegetables.
Yeah, it was
actually
vegetables and organ meat were the like the biggest things for me, that once I really started focusing on adding those to my diet and really focused on nutrient density, I saw like almost immediate results. So the other portion of that I would say is, you know, you could technically be on an autoimmune protocol, which would just be the removal of, you know, the things that are supposed to be eliminated. I'll let Sarah kind of go into that. But I don't think that people will see the same results as if they were to follow the paleo approach as it's defined to both remove and add, as well as the lifestyle factors. So those things in combination led to like what felt like almost an immediate improvement in the conditions that I had seen really, really slow improvement on over the first like 2 to 3 months. And then it was like, boom. You know, big, big improvement once I focused on those other factors. So some things to consider there.
Yeah. I like, one of the things that you said was sort of like the differentiation between autoimmune protocol, which is just stuff that you eliminate. And I guess you did throw that to me, so I'll just have to list them: eggs, nuts, seeds, nightshades, alcohol, NSAIDs. But there's this major differentiation I spent a lot of time researching when I wrote The Paleo Approach and really trying to understand the nuanced details. And it becomes actually, I think, even more about what you add in than it does about what you leave out. Because when we have nutrient sufficiency, it changes how we respond to suboptimal other things, right? Like having enough vitamin D changes how your body processes fructose. Having enough zinc will determine whether or not your body gets really inflamed when you eat a tomato. So there's things like that are really, really important. But the other aspect of the Paleo Approach is that it's not just diet. So whenever somebody's struggling, you know, the questions that I encourage them to ask themselves are, am I really getting enough sleep? And am I really managing my stress? Because those two things are so fundamental for healing, and they really get into not just immune regulation, but gut health, neurological health, and then how those things play into skin health. And the other thing that is also sort of worth talking about here is the skin microbiome. So we get really geeky about probiotics for our gut. We get really geeky about fiber and like all of the things we can do for our gut microbiome. But the, you know, microorganisms that live in our gut are only about 70% of the microorganisms that live in our entire body. So there's still, right, like 3 trillion, you know, bacteria and other organisms that are living in our skin and our sinuses, right, other places in our body. And so one of the things that, you know, can really help psoriasis is sort of babying our skin microbiome a little bit. There's a lot of species that like to live in our skin that are very, very sensitive to soaps and chemicals. You know, having washing less frequently, washing with very low chemical cleansers, moisturizing. There's a lot of these sort of natural moisturizers like the tallow olive oil balms that are all over the place now in the paleo community. They're natural sources of vitamin A and vitamin D and really good fats that actually are providing that nutrition that those cells need from the outside as well. So they can be really, really helpful for gut barrier function skin function. They can be really, really helpful for skin function. And so having a look at, you know, the skincare products, exposure to cleaners, laundry detergents, I mean, all of those things can be really, really strong irritants that can just sort of propel things when the body is really struggling to heal things from the inside.
I just want to state for the record that it is not a mute button issue that I'm having.
You don't have anything to say?
It's that you have completed our thoughts on the matter.
Oh, okay. Excellent. I approve. All right. Let's do one more question. So this question is from Emily. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly because it's not spelt like...
I would have gone with that. It's like European Emily, but yes.
Okay. French Emily, maybe. There we go. I just offended people.
I was going to say, you said at the beginning you weren't going to offend people, and now you've managed to find another country to offend.
I speak French, though.
I speak for the France.
And I don't speak for the French. I just speak the French language. Mediocrely. Okay. Emily, if that's how her name's pronounced, and I apologize if it's not. Hi, Stacey and Sarah. My question is about keratosis pilaris, some kind of skin disease where you get small red bumps or zits all over your arms. My case is pretty bad, I think, and even though paleo has done wonders for me, it hasn't helped with this. All my arms are red and the skin on my legs are very harsh. I was wondering if you know something about it and if there's a solution to the problem. Internet says no cures exist, but I have seen others fixing it with proper nutrition. I once heard a doctor comparing it to psoriasis, which is an autoimmune condition. I don't know if keratosis pilaris is, though. What do you think?
Okay, so this has absolutely no scientific reference or information, and Sarah will probably pull up the Google upon me saying this, if she hasn't already done it, but she's given me secret notes. Ha ha ha. But I actually read an article about it because it was a condition that I had pretty severely years ago, before I went paleo, and it got better. And one of the things that I read is that it's been linked to insulin resistance or blood sugar dysregulation, and that it's very common in people who have metabolic syndrome. And mine got like 90% better when I went paleo. I still notice it sometimes, and I can't really tie it specifically to something that I've done, but it's like not, probably somebody else wouldn't notice it. It's because like I'm looking for it and examining my skin on a regular basis because I have, as I earlier described, sensitive skin. So I would say, if you're trying paleo and you're not seeing results in that, that I would think about trying to modify the amount of sugars, and sugar can mean a lot of different things, that you're having in your diet. I don't personally recommend a super low carb diet, but a lower carb version of paleo might be helpful in your case. I don't have the information about her health, her history, her weight, stuff like that, but it's what Dr. Google told me about it when I looked into it a couple of years ago.
So Dr. Google and I have a love-hate relationship, I'm just saying. So, you know, what's interesting about keratosis pollaris is what it's caused by is the overproduction of keratin. The keratin is the protein that our skin cells make that gives our skin pigment. So you have more keratin if you have darker colored skin, you have less if you have lighter colored skin. Like if you tan, you have a lot of keratin. And keratin is a really neat protein because it actually like blocks the sun rays and can actually protect the DNA in your skin cells from damage from UV radiation. So that's one of the reasons why we see, you know, higher rates of skin cancer in fairer people compared to, you know, ethnicities with much darker skin. So what happens in keratosis pollaris is there's this overproduction of keratin, and it creates these like hard plugs. So it like basically clogs the area around a hair follicle. And it actually can make it so that the hair follicle can't grow properly, and you can get ingrown hairs. And that's where they start to look a little bit more acne-like. But you can get these keratin plugs also around sweat glands, which can be a problem as well. And so that's what's causing – yeah.
Can I ask a quick question? Because I feel like maybe I was talking about the wrong thing. I'm talking about the like reddish bumpy rash that people get on kind of like – usually it starts in the – upper back part of their arm, like the tricep area. That's what we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and that's what causes it is this overproduction of keratin. It is seen with higher frequency in diabetics, but it is not, to my knowledge, ever been directly linked with insulin resistance. What there is more information coming out though, is that inflammation is part of the problem that's going on. So it is an inflammatory disorder. And of course, inflammation goes with diabetes and insulin resistance. So that might be the link, right? That just people with obesity and metabolic syndrome and diabetes tend to have a lot more inflammation. So whether or not there's a direct link in terms of, you know, whether or not, you know, testing your blood sugars and measuring your carbohydrates is going to be helpful, I haven't seen any scientific studies to support that. But it is a condition. It's not an autoimmune condition, but inflammation is still part of the problem, part of what's going on. And I tried to find any scientific studies that looked at nutrient deficiencies and keratosis pollaris. And I fell down the rabbit hole of PubMed. So I did hours looking for anything, any mineral, you know, fish oil, any vitamin, and there's nothing. Nobody has looked to see if there's a nutrient deficiency that increases your risk of keratosis pollaris. But from what we know about other skin conditions, nutrient deficiencies are almost certainly at play. And then because we know that nutrient deficiency propels inflammation, you know, that's also a good sort of reinforcement of that hypothesis that nutrient deficiency is probably something that's going on. So generally, you know, I think that a micronutrient focused approach. Maybe playing with sequential eliminations of the foods on the autoimmune protocol. So just making sure, right? I don't think you need to go full bore AIP, but you know, making sure that nightshades aren't a problem for you, eliminate them for a couple of weeks. Make sure nuts aren't a problem for you and eliminate them for a couple of weeks, and just, or do like a IgG food sensitivity panel and see if you can hone in on some of that stuff. So I would be looking at, you know, a nutritional approach to reducing inflammation and just like a full, right, like saturate the body with nutrients. And then beyond that, you know, there are some medications that can help. I mean, yes, some of them are topical steroids. But sometimes, and it's one of those things we see in the paleo community, is this sort of, you know, we've found this amazing solution that has to do with food and getting enough sleep and spending time outside. And we get so jaded when it comes to conventional medicine. But when we're talking about something where we're like, we really don't understand the cause, so we don't know how to target a nutritional approach to healing it, you know, making use of conventional medicine, even though it's a symptom measure, like it's decreasing the symptoms of it. It's still not root cause, right? It's still not a cure, but it can, you know, reduce the appearance. It can make it go away. And if you're doing that in conjunction with sort of a best guess nutritional approach, that's at least where I would start. I would start with nutrient density and you know, doing all of those things we know that are so important for inflammation, like getting enough sleep, managing stress, being active. And then, you know, if that's not enough, I'd go talk to my doctor and see what they can offer. So it's, you know, it's not life-threatening. It doesn't impact, right? It doesn't turn into anything. But at the same time, right, it's not pleasant. And so that's certainly what I'd be doing. And the only thing I'd be really leery of would be like taking an oral steroid.
Cool. No, I agree with you that it could be inflammation, but I just want to kind of be a little more specific than what you already said, which is that there would be a reduction in inflammation from managing or improving blood sugar dysregulation, because yes, that in and of itself is inflammatory. So among other things, I think either way, we're kind of like, we're saying the exact same thing. We're just not exactly sure, because it sounds like the medical research isn't out there, that we don't know the specific cause. So hopefully we've given you enough ideas to think about how you can make those improvements. And I would say from a more general aspect, the same could be said of a lot of different skin conditions. So
yeah, it's true. I mean, I think there's a lot of skin conditions. I mean, really the vast majority of skin conditions out there are autoimmune. The rest are immune, right? The rest have inflammation as part of the problem. And so, you know, anytime you're talking about inflammation being part of the problem, then doing something like an autoimmune protocol or like a really micronutrient focused paleo diet is going to help, because the immune system just needs those nutrient resources. It is such a nutrient hog when it comes to using up vitamins and minerals and essential amino acids and essential fatty acids. And so having the raw materials that it needs to do its job is the best thing that you can do to make sure it knows how to turn itself off.
Awesome. So thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Paleo View. I feel like we dropped a lot of knowledge, and we're hoping that you pick it up and you feel really good about it, and you make good choices, and you eat things with nutrients in them. I feel like, you know, after 3 whole years of this podcast, we're feeling really like that message is we feel good about it. We're not turning a 180 or changing our mind on the idea that eating an anti-inflammatory, nutrient-dense diet will be good for you. Shocker.
You know, seriously, if we decided that that was not something we endorsed, which would be probably involve some kind of mental illness, I think, in order to have that event occur. But then, like, we shouldn't do this podcast anymore.
Do you think so? We couldn't just say, like, hey, guys, we've decided that McDonald's is the best choice you could possibly make.
Right. We decided that everyone should eat donuts 3 meals a day.
What is that diet and how do I make it
happen? It's called the donut diet and it'll
kill ya. It tastes darn good.
It's all about subjective quality of life and early death rates and high chronic illness rates. But subjective quality of life.
Subjective.
So I'm going to go make paleo donuts right now.
Oh my gosh. You're killing me. So right now, Matt, I can hear him like whipping the thing to make egg whites is making me angel food cake from Carrie Vett's website. I think it's Deliciously Organic. That's pretty close. Anyway, we'll put a link in the show notes. But it's like legit from her blog. It looks like real angel food cake. I've seen paleo quote unquote recipes for angel food cake and none of them have been like, oh, that looks real. But angel food cake was one of those foods that like used to be my favorite and I love to eat them with berries and it's like right now berry season. So he's making it happen.
I have tried 6 variations so far on a paleo angel food cake and I have not posted the recipe yet.
Because you're not happy.
No.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you know. Instagram will let you know how this turns out.
I will check the Instagram.
Because I'm super.
So maybe I just can give up the ghost and just be like, done. Someone else.
I love it when other people create things that like I struggled to perfect. Like that's how I feel about the Urban Posers tomatoless marinara sauce. Like everybody has their own version of like a no-mato or a, you know, no tomato marinara. And I was never really happy with any that I tried. And I, you know, Matt and I had like tried to make a couple ourselves and just never were really happy with it. And then I made the Urban Posers and now I just kind of live on the stuff. Like I miss tomatoes. Like my heritage is paprika and tomatoes. My grandparents were Hungarian and Italian. So AIP is not easy for me. Finding something that replaces tomatoes in my life is super satisfying.
Does it taste like you feel like you're getting the flavor of tomatoes?
I absolutely, especially when it's like in things. So when he made the lasagna for me with like Capello's noodles and Kite Hill almond ricotta, and which neither of those are AIP, but like I'm just off nightshades at this point, and the no-mato sauce, like it legit tasted like lasagna. I was so excited. So, yeah.
Well, I guess I know what I'm making for dinner tomorrow.
Highly recommend it. And now when you make it and you try it and you're like, you're a genius, you have to be like, Stacy, thanks for the recommendation. Just saying.
Okay.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Now you can, and now that we've just like made everybody salivate with the idea of donuts and angel food cake and
marinara,
go off and eat good paleo things. Don't make good choices, everybody. Make good choices.
We're just tired. I know when I'm tired, I start thinking about food I shouldn't eat, and then I go to bed instead. That's what I do.
I drink tea when that happens.
I think going to bed's more exciting.
I mean, not exciting, probably a better choice, but nonetheless.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Hold on.
Should we try that one again?
Yeah.
Okay, you want to go?
You go.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
We'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
I don't know. Do you need me to screen capture me sending you a text message?
Yes. Yes, I need photographic evidence.
Or else what? Are you going to send me to detention?
Oh, no. I have far nastier plans than detention. Yard work. I will sentence you to yard work.
You're going to sentence me to yard work? Well, that might be difficult without go-go gadget arms.
Wouldn't having go-go gadget arms be the most awesome thing ever?
How creepy would it be if you were, like, in North Carolina and my go-go gadget arms were, like, you know...
Doing my yard work for
going
me?
Through your house so that I could get to...
And
Georgia.
Someone's like, what are those things floating in the air, moving subtly while you weed my garden? I just think we've got the premise for an excellent movie out of that right there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, if I had Go-Go Gadget
cult
arms,
classic.
I'm pretty sure that I would be doing more important things than weeding your yard with them. Just a thought.
You'd be like saving the world or something. Something noble and amazing. Right?
I'll try. Maybe. Someday.
Okay. Apparently I can't type.
That is awful typing. I never in my life have seen something less accurate than what you just typed.
Well, it's because I got frustrated and just did the...
And then people, she typed, yes, it is, because it's a Google Doc, so I can see what she's saying. So as I said, it was terrible typing.